When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode may contain explicit language. Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Monday, December 4th, the Around the World edition. I'm Zach Rosen. I make another podcast. It's called The Best Advice Show. And I'm dad to Noah, who is 6, and Ami, who's 3. We live in Detroit.
I'm Jamila Lemieux, a writer, contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding Parenting column, and mom to Naima, who is 10, and we live in Los Angeles.
I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the homeschool and family travel blog Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom of 3 littles, Henry, who's 11, Oliver, who's 9, and Teddy, who's 6. We live in Tokyo, Japan.
On today's show, we're bringing you a conversation Elizabeth had with Alana Best, author of Around the World in Black and White, Traveling as a Biracial Blended Family. Alana has amazing practical tips for traveling all over the world with little ones, and she also has some big picture ideas about what it means to be a blended, mixed-race family. There's something for everyone in this conversation, so you won't want to miss it. Afterwards, all 3 of us will be back to do a round of recommendations. See you back here in a minute.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
All right, we're back. Elizabeth, can you tell us what we're going to hear right now?
Yeah, so this was like sitting down with a friend. Alana wrote this lovely book about traveling with her biracial family around the world. The interview and the book really covers everything from these practical travel tips to dealing with the unexpected on her trip. She has all kinds of things happen, good, bad. All of that too happens with kind of her realization that every member of her family is having a different experience and approaching the trip differently due to the color of their skin. And this is something that they have to deal with. And the lovely part is that Alana really is kind of reckoning with feeling like this is something that she understood and realizing into the trip that it was something she didn't understand. It's just a really great book. It's lovely. It's candid. And I mean, I don't know that you can walk away from this without feeling like you should do some travel planning yourself. So I hope you enjoy our conversation.
Hi, I'm Alana Best, author of Around the World in Black and White, Traveling with a Biracial Blended Family. We traveled the world for a year with a then 5-week-old baby and 10-year-old daughter. And now we are a budding big family of a 4-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 16-year-old.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm so excited that you're here because, as our listeners know, I love traveling. I love traveling with kids. And so much of your book just rang true, made me feel seen. But you also have just these like amazing other experiences that you synthesize so well kind of at the end about seeing the world and understanding the world. And that's kind of what I want to talk about. But let's start with telling us about your decision to embark on a year-long travel with a newborn son and then your 10-year-old daughter. Like, what inspired you to do this? Are you crazy? Like, tell us how you ended up deciding this is a good idea.
Yeah. So first of all, sorry, I should have mentioned we're in Canada. So my partner and I, our family live in Victoria, British Columbia, Canada. we have this lovely parental leave, of which it can be a year to a year and a half, depending on what you prefer. And you get paid fairly well through that. And our employer at the time also topped it up. On top of that, we also did what was called a deferred salary leave program. You put a percentage of your salary away, you can take a period of time off, and then you have to guarantee your job when you get back. So when my husband and I moved in together, we started this thinking like, okay, we're splitting the bills 50-50. That's awesome. We can take off 20% of our salary. We're still on the up. And that gave us also something to dream about and think about and, you know, all that fun things for 4 years before we decided to embark on this journey. But we were also getting a bit older and we wanted to have kids. And we really thought about, do we take this year and go and travel and then come back and try and have a family? Do we just try and have the family and take all the money, forget about the travel, put it into, you know, RESPs and all the practical things? Or do we just try and do our best to do it all? And I guess, you know, my motto is kind of more is more and go do it and live and, you know, everything you've got. So we just decided to give it a go.
I mean, you're speaking to my heart. That is definitely where we are as well. What were your initial expectations? Like when you are first planning the trip, what are you thinking this is going to look like?
So I thought at first when the baby was a bucket baby, we could travel a little quicker. But we've also thought we can only handle one activity a day.
Okay.
So we only planned one major event a day, thinking that would also leave us a lot of downtime. We also knew that we would probably maximize daytime activities and there would be very little evening activities. But then we did discover that you can find babysitters on beautiful apps throughout the world as we traveled. So we did end up doing more than we thought we could. And we found out that we actually could do a lot of travel frequently over a long period of time. And babies are the most adaptable things, and so are children. So I was really impressed with the amount that we were able to do. Although I would say 5 weeks old is maybe a little early.
In your book, you are, I think, so transparent with the reader about kind of where you are mentally throughout this trip. And something that really resonated with me is this panic that happens towards the end about the passports, because I have been there. So essentially you misplace the passports. You put them somewhere, like in a drawer, and then can't find them. But this sort of follows you then throughout like the next couple days, right? You're trying to get the passports and there's lots of other situations going around. Do you, in those moments though, you seemed both panicked but able to move on and do some things while the resolution is happening, which is something I think a lot of us strive. Like I felt like it would paralyze me. Like I sometimes can't get over something like that. Do you have advice? Because those moments happen, right? They happen whether you're traveling or not. How were you able to sort of, it seems like you almost were able to say like, okay, we're doing what we can about this, but I'm still going to go have a good time. Do you have some advice for good self-talk? Are you?
Yeah, I think there's part of it that's compartmentalization. And part of it is, you know, what can you control and what can you not control? So I think there were moments where we couldn't find these passports. My partner desperately needed to get back to Canada because of an unwell parent, which added to, you know, the anxiety. And but they were, you know, they were in someone else's hands. We had finally found them. There's these moments throughout where it's like, I can't find them, but there's nothing else we can do. Everybody needs to sleep. Like staying up and panicking about it for another 3 hours is then going to lead to worse consequences. And so everybody was going to sleep. And then there's nothing we found them, or there's nothing more we can do. We're waiting for emails back. Okay, all we can do is go and enjoy the day or sit here and be miserable. Like, what are the options?
Yeah.
And so I think for me, it's just about stopping and being like, if I continue to spiral, there's actually no outcome.
Yeah.
There's nothing I can change or do. So there's choices and how we react and what we can manage and do. And for me, I just sort of take it and push it aside and say, at this time, I will go and revisit and relook and see what we can do. But until then, it's not going to serve us well at all. And we're only in Paris once. So Here we go.
We all need that mentality. We're only here once. Let's just do this. I do want to delve in because your book really explores your family's experience as a biracial blended family. And you talk about what it taught you about your own identity. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So I identify as white and my husband is Black. And then we have a white daughter who was the 10-year-old at the time of the book from my previous marriage. And then there is a biracial child as well. So we've got quite a modern family going on. And what I knew, you know, about white privilege, like in concept, I understood what it was. I believed it to be true. I could see it in theory. I understood it. I did not understand. Like when I was exposed to 24 hours a day traveling with a person of color and being in a wide variety of circumstances and seeing the exposure of that over and over and over and over again. Every time we walked into a restaurant, every time we had to go through security, every time, you know, he got trailed by a security guard in a grocery store or just how people looked at us, treated us, the assumptions that were made. And there were some very overt racism things that had happened, but there was also a lot of micro things. And sometimes it was just how much better I got treated and not necessarily that he got treated poorly. So it was an accumulation of many different events that were large and small that I really realized that I walk in this world in a very different space than he does. And how we're able to travel, the things we're able to do and feel safe and good and welcomed are completely different.
Were you having conversations with him during the travel about these things? Like, is that a topic that was open from the beginning? Did it become more open as you traveled?
Yeah, so it did become more open as we traveled. So we had been together for 3 years prior, but you sort of live your own life. Like you come together in the evening, you sort of have these mutual friends, you go to work, you know, maybe there's like one comment that somebody says something, but it's not in the ear or whatever, but it's not like this. It's not like being exposed like this for a year. And I think part of the issue was that Roland, my partner who's Black, was walking in the world in one way and assumed that to be sort of normal.
Right.
And how he expects to be treated and expects people to react to him and the things that he knows. And he thought I knew what that looked like and what that was. And then I was walking in a parallel universe of which I get treated a certain way and I wouldn't know why anybody would treat him any differently. So as these things started coming up, I was like, what's going on here? How come this is happening? We would start to have these conversations of, he thought I knew and I had no clue. And so we started really diving into like, you know, past things that had happened to him, how he's lived his life, what his parents have taught him, how they've taught him to act, react, think about the color of his skin and how he should be in the world and to avoid negative consequences, to make sure that he never gives people a reason to have a negative outcome. About how hard he has to work to achieve certain things. So all of these things, I think some of it I knew in theory, but I felt like I really experienced it in a different way.
It's different when you experience even a slight piece of it, right? Like just to, there's a part of your book where I can't remember where you are, but you talk about how all of a sudden you are the one standing out and being so clearly not part of the culture and not part of it. And I, that resonated with me. We've just moved to Tokyo. And so a small bit of that of, and I think a lot now about how like, this is just a small, right? Like this is so small, but how much it changes, like who you are and, you know, how you experience things.
Definitely. I remember one time, it's not in the book because it was in a different trip, but my daughter was 10 and Roland and I went to Kenya and we were sitting in a resort and there's these, you know, kids clubs.
Yeah.
And she was so excited to go to this kids club. She wanted to go in and do all these arts and crafts and she stopped at the door when she got there. I was like, no, I'm not going in. I was like, what's wrong? You were so excited about it. Let's go and talk to them. Let's do this. And she was like, no, I'm going to be the only white person there. And I was like, oh, okay, we need to have a conversation about that. So we did. And I kind of explained about how Roland is, you know, typically in Canada, one of the few or the only Black person in a room, in the boardroom, et cetera. And that, you know, she should go and give it a try and see that, you know, we're all people and, you know, they're there to have fun with her. So she did end up going. She had an amazing time, but it really did teach her about empathy, being a minority in a situation. And I feel as, you know, white North Americans, we should all have to go through that a little bit and experience some of it, because it will, I think, change your perspective on how you treat other people that are the minority in your situation.
I want to talk a little about your kids' kind of understanding of cultural diversity. Did you see, especially with your older one, did you see a shift in that through the travel? Like, did her mindset change? Did her understanding of kind of the world change?
I think Josephine has a lot of exposure to many different things. So when Roland came into her life, she was 4 or 5 years old. And at first, when she, you know, were there on the playground, she would say, oh, my dad's coming to pick me up. Like, she didn't differentiate that it was my stepdad or my bonus dad or whatever. And then people's reactions to her made her so uncomfortable that she started feeling the need to have this whole narrative about what her family dynamic was beforehand. And that, you know, was complicated and hard. And then that kind of continued on in the travel. So every time we would end up in a security line, they look at the white daughter. They may not be able to see the biracial child who's like quite young and like a little baby. And us, and they assume we're not together. They assume we're not a family. And then when we do go up, there's a lot of questions about what's going on. Whereas in a lot of blended families, if you're from a similar cultural background, it's just not an issue. You don't have to kind of go through. So it's this constant explaining about your family, your dynamics, your togetherness. So I think that has really stuck with her for a long time, just how she needs to do that and how it can be quite taxing. I also think that because she's been to Africa with us a few times, sees how differently she is. Like, because the time you were talking about, we were in South Africa where Josephine and I were the only white people. Yeah. We were in this tattoo parlor. We had to run to go use the washroom. We're, you know, there's lots of people looking at us and staring at us, wondering what on earth we are doing there. And she's like, you know, kind of looks at me like, are we okay? Are we safe? And I'm like, I'm not sure. I just can feel the eyes, right? Yeah. And we were okay. So it's, for me, it's always this like, trying to teach her, but also trying to make sure that she doesn't feel afraid just because she looks different than the other people that she's being surrounded with in that room. So I feel like there's a lot of conversations that happen with her that and that have matured her and understanding sort of what it's like to be in a blended biracial family more than, you know, a lot of her friends.
Yeah, your book looks at that, like separating the uncomfortable from afraid, and then kind of taking a minute to say, like, well, why do I feel uncomfortable, right? Like I need to unpack why this makes me feel uncomfortable and learn about that. Did you have a memorable cultural experience from one of the places that you were visiting?
I have a million. should I think of my, like, favorite one? So I think one of my favorite moments, like in terms of cultural culinary bliss, was in China. So we were in Beijing and we decided to stay in this hotel in the Hutong district, which is, it's a very old district. So what you walk into, there's a bunch of very thin, small back alleys that are extremely windy. And we were there in January, so there wasn't very many tourists around. And we basically got lost all the time trying to figure out our way home or our way around. And I would say that it is very authentic. There's lots of people that are living there. There's shared bathroom situations. It's really cold. There's like mattresses along walls, et cetera, et cetera. And so we found just getting lost in those such a beautiful moment, because it wasn't clean. It wasn't pristine. It wasn't beautiful. But it was beautiful because it was so ancient. It was like this old way of living in this old world in this place. And our hotel manager used to be a chef in Montreal. I had given us some advice for a couple of restaurants to go to around. So you would get lost in these alleys. And then, you know, and we're trying to follow this map that he's shown us to get into this restaurant. And I'm like, I think we go down this back alley. And then I think we go down this other back alley. And somehow we end up on some door that looks like the back door where, you know, people bring out the trash. And you walk in and it opens up to the most gorgeous courtyard I've ever seen. And, you know, we get served this, you know, we're all sitting there trying to, you know, Google Translate our way through the menus and figure things out. But it was like by far one of the best meals I have ever had. So for me, it was like not assuming that what's going on the outside is what's going on the inside, and that they've really used this sort of ancient, beautiful, like way of organizing their city and transformed it and just adopted it and accepted it. And that you can find like sort of these beautiful hidden gems if you, if you kind of can do that, take away like and not worry about the outside aesthetic and just enjoy the inside.
Yeah. Have you changed as a parent from the trip?
Oh, yeah. A lot. I think, you know, I don't honestly think I understood how I would ever raise, you know, Black children without going through this experience. So I think that's a big part of it, was I needed to really dig deep and figure out what I'm teaching my kids, the types of conversations I'm having with the girls versus the boys. Some of them will be similar but different. Mm-hmm. And with the white child versus, you know, the Black children. And that is something that will stick with me forever. And then I'm now, I think, making much more of a conscious effort to learn. And my oldest has now come up to be part of the LGBTQ2S+ community. And so I feel like for me, it's this real being open is so important to understanding who they are as individuals, understanding what they are, and then how they're going to move through this world, how the world is going to treat them based on those identities that are visible and not visible, that they choose to be or not choose. So that was a huge piece that I felt I would need to continuously learn to be the best parent possible.
Yeah.
And I also felt in some ways I hoped that the travel, especially for the 10-year-old, would give them a bigger sense of the world. And, you know, to not be caught up as a teenage girl in their tiny microcosm of a high school.
Yeah.
And to remember that the world is their oyster and that you can kind of go out and live life. And it doesn't need to be bordered in by, you know, your current existence in your town or your city and your high school. And I think that part was successful. I do feel like she has... when she learns about all the different places, like we've been to Auschwitz, we've been to many different places. So when she learns about it in school, she's a different understanding of it. And I think so her learning through that has been exponential. But also I think that it's expanded her mind to what the possibilities are and what her world should be. So I would say that is the biggest gift a parent can give their kids.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons we've always tried to take these jobs that are in different places are moving. But I always want to mention too that if you can't get across the world, I find that you can have a lot of these broadening experiences by exploring your own town and finding areas, communities, things that you wouldn't normally go to, right? Like you got to travel the world to see some of these, but I think for a lot of us, some of that exists in our own neighborhoods and communities, just putting ourselves out there and trying new things, and be it like new foods or new activities, right? Just kind of immersing yourself in something else can be helpful.
Definitely. There's great documentaries out there. There's wonderful books out there. There's a lot of access, you know, that is very close by, and it is worth, you know, just going and giving it a try.
Yeah. Reading your book is one of those, right? Like you can armchair travel by reading about your experiences, and you do such a nice job of putting, like, as I'm reading, I can see myself there with my children doing those things. And I think that's so nice, like, to bring some of your lessons, like, to other people's hearts, you know? What do you hope that our listeners can gain from your book?
So I traveled the world with my family not to write a book. Yeah. I traveled to travel because I love it, because I wanted to expose my kids to it, because I thought it would be such a lovely, like, love story bonding moment with my family to get all those memories with them. And I wrote this book because so many things happened throughout our journey that I felt would be beneficial to share. And I wrote it specifically with white people in mind and interracial couples in mind, because I think white people need to speak to other white people about race and white privilege and our understanding of that. Mm-hmm. And I tried to be very, very vulnerable in the book and explain sort of my naivety and mm-hmm. where I was at and what my thinking was, in hopes that other people will relate to that and not be scared to also say, oh, I thought this, I thought that. How come it's like this? Why is it like that? So that we can start to build and have some of these conversations. And I think there's, you know, the beginning of a lot of conversations in this book of what you relate to in your thinking with me, what maybe you would have done differently if you were me, what maybe you would have done the same, yeah. and, you know, how I thought about it and kind of worked my way through it. So my, you know, deep hope is that people read this book and see some of themselves in it, and then start to have conversations with themselves and with others about what they heard in it.
Again, that was Alana Best, author of Around the World in Black and White, Traveling as a Biracial Blended Family. We're going to take another quick break and see you back here in a minute.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Talking about money can be so hard, especially when the person you're talking to is still learning how to do long division. That's why Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace, is here to help. I'm Bridget, and with my fellow co-host Ryan, we help teach your little ones about complex topics like bankruptcy, climate change, and why there's so much gold at Fort Knox, and so much more. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's move on to recommendations. Elizabeth, what do you got this week?
So this is actually, Zach, you had recommended a while back the Keep Going travel kits. And when we got here with the kids being kind of on their own, I got one of their small travel kits. They're like the perfect size to fit in their book bags. And they have been the biggest hit.
Like, these are the first aid kits?
Like they're the first aid kits, first the aid Keep kit. Going uh-huh. small travel kit. I know you had recommended like the bit you were with a friend and they had the big mm-hmm, kit that mm-hmm. had everything. This yep. small travel kit has everything the kids like need. In fact, it came up in parent-teacher conferences that Oliver is like always ready for a disaster. But seriously, it's been really nice because they are coming home on their own and as with all children, we've had cuts and scrapes. Their friends have had them. And this kit just has like the perfect amount of stuff. It's hard for us to lose because it's brightly colored. They got to pick out a pattern. So I was just thinking in the holiday spirit, this is like the perfect little, it feels fancy and fun, but is incredibly helpful. And it is, I can't tell you, it's like the perfect little size. It's soft-sided. I have another like kit, but it's in a metal tin, which sets off those new metal detectors that just look for metal. Like you have to pull it out. This one, you don't have to do that. I've just been really impressed with it. So it was worth a second mention. So thanks, Zach, for mentioning that.
Oh, yeah.
We're just loving the little travel kit.
They're so cute. I love the design on those sacks. Super cool. Jamila, what are you recommending?
I'm recommending sweet potato honey bun cake. It's a recipe that went viral on TikTok, and I stumbled across it last week, and I thought, this looks really good. And Naima was so opposed to it. She was like, that sounds gross. And then she found out there was sour cream in it, and she was like, oh my God, this is disgusting. And she absolutely loved it. It's so good. I cut the glaze in half just because the cake is really sweet. But it's really delicious. It's easy to make. You use boxed cake mix and you add a few things, including mashed sweet potato, and it is awesome.
This looks so good. Yeah, so it's basically yellow cake mix plus cinnamon, sweet potato, brown sugar, nutmeg, pecans, and sour cream. Yum. Did you use the optional orange food coloring?
I didn't. I don't really like food
What's
coloring.
What's that even for? What is that? Just to make it look
right.
more orangey?
Just to make it orange,
to get that
I guess.
Honey I don't... feeling?
I guess. Maybe it's to make it look more like sweet potatoes. But I don't like it. Food coloring.
Yeah. That looks tasty.
I didn't use the pecans either.
Sounds like a good breakfast, too. I am going to recommend a show that just finished up a 10-episode run on PBS Kids. It's called Mega Wow. Have either of your kids watched this?
No.
Yes.
Yes and no. It's hosted by this really charming, funny comedian. I think she's from Seattle or Portland. Katie Nguyen, Nguyen. It just popped up on the app and Noah was watching it. It's so great. They're like 7 to 10 minute episodes. And it feels like very DIY. It's almost as if like this Katie person, I know she's can't possibly be doing it all on her own, but it kind of looks like that. And each episode is like very different. One of them is about like how you make your own movie sound effects. One of them is about how to make instruments out of vegetables. One of them's how to make slug slime. One of them investigates what's inside owl pellets. Another one's all about bouncy balls. It's so charming and funny and like cheesy in a kind of really clever, funny way. So it's going to work on your kids. It'll work on you. It's really cool. And I saw that she announced on social media that like the 10th episode was the final. So I don't know why that is. I think they should keep making the show. So if you're listening, PBS programmers, keep Mega Wow coming. It's a very refreshing entry to the PBS Kids world.
Nice.
This sounds like something we would very much enjoy. I need to go check it out.
Yeah, and it'll give you ideas too of DIY projects for the house. And that's our show. Please subscribe, leave a rating and review, and tell your friends. This episode of Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson and Maura Curry. Shasha Leonard is the voice of our listeners. Alicia Montgomery is the VP of Slate Audio. For Jamila Lemieux and Elizabeth Newcamp, I'm Zach Rosen. Thanks for listening.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.